You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 466 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this fine Monday evening. And later on in the podcast, I'll be joined by Jeff Siegel of Peachtree Hoops and Early Bird Rights and all over the place on the internet, you know, including Dime and all those places. And Jeff is coming up soon. He's probably the most frequent guest of the podcast, so I'm sure you guys are familiar. But if you are a new listener, that'll be a fun conversation that we will have later on in the pod. But before we get to that, a couple of news items to hit on that I felt like sparing Jeff of at this point in time on this Monday evening. First and foremost, there was an update on John Collins on Monday evening. No surprise, but he's not quite ready to be back just yet. He was set to be examined over the weekend, and he was examined according to an update from the Hawks. Actually, before that update came out, Chris Fillmore, the AJC, reported that Collins had not returned to full practice, and he was going to miss several more games, quote-unquote, from Fillmore. That was the first reporting on this. Actually, later on in the day on Monday, both Chris Kirchner of The Athletic and Kevin Chouinard of Hawks.com brought word from Lloyd Pierce saying that Collins was going to travel on the team's West Coast trip that begins actually on Sunday. They're probably going to leave Saturday, but the first game is Sunday against the Los Angeles Lakers on the road. But at the same time, he will not be necessarily cleared to play for that whole trip, but that they're going to take him on that trip, and hopefully he'll be able to make his return before the trip is over. There was officially an update from the Hawks later on Monday afternoon saying that Collins did in fact have that examination over the weekend, and the release said, and I quote, that Collins has progressed to modified on-court drills and shooting routines with the goal of integrating him into modified team practice within the coming week, end quote. No further timetable in terms of the official announcement there. Lloyd Pierce did seem pretty upbeat, according to what was passed along by Kale Chouinard and company over at practice on Monday. And basically, Collins has been in the gym doing some stuff, not a whole lot of, I believe the quote was not a whole lot of in the paint, up and down activity just yet from Collins, but that'll be coming very, very soon. Looks like he's going to be nearing a return, you know, probably another week out, I would imagine, plus, considering the Hawks do. I'm not sure he's going to be ready to go for that first game on the road trip on Sunday, so probably more than a week for Collins, but I do think that he is nearing a return. I've long speculated, this is pure speculation on my part, but if the Hawks had a playoff game to win today, he probably would be able to go if he had to, but there's just no reason whatsoever to rush John Collins back. There's been a lot of talk on Peachtree Hoops message boards and all that fun stuff in the comments that, you know, this is some sort of elaborate tanking move. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I do think that, you know, again, if the world was ending and they had to play a basketball game, John Collins could probably play. At the same time, he would be limited, and there's absolutely no reason in a season in which the team is not going to be competing for the playoffs to push along one of your better assets for, in my opinion, your second best asset for the future behind Trae Young is John Collins. And, unless you're counting the draft picks for the future, but your second best on-roster asset is John Collins. And with that said, there's no reason at all to push him ahead. I know there was a video that Kevin Chouinard posted of him sort of doing some individual work, getting some shots up, kind of moving well. He's not limping when I see him around the locker room, et cetera, et cetera. And Travis Schlecht noted, I believe it was last week, that Collins has no pain at this point in time. But with that said, every reason to be very, very comfortable and very, very, I guess, cautious with the way that Collins is being brought back. And that's going to be sort of the overarching theme of things moving forward. And it should be, because honestly, there's no reason to rush him. So unless he's absolutely 100%, I would not be playing him. And even then, I still give another couple of days after he is 100% just to be absolutely safe. Ankles can linger, as we saw with Mike Muscala last year and other cases around the league. So Collins, I guess caution is the word of the day. He'll be back again within the next couple of weeks, I'd imagine. And that's a pretty good sign for the Hawks team that absolutely needs him moving forward. One more thing to hit on, and that is that Taurean Prince is actually listed as doubtful with an ankle sprain for the game on Tuesday on election night up in Charlotte. I'm recording this at Monday evening. That was the official diagnosis in terms of what the Hawks announced, was a right ankle sprain. He suffered that in the fourth quarter against Miami. It was pretty clear when he suffered it. He did stay in the game and play after that, but at the same time, not a huge surprise. They will give him an extra day. If I was the Hawks, I would not actually have Taurean travel, because the Hawks have a Wednesday night back-to-back when they come back home and play the Knicks Knicks on Wednesday, I would probably leave Torian at home and not play him in that game. Same reasoning as Collins. I'm sure, all things equal, Prince could maybe push through it for some reason, but there's no reason to do that whatsoever on the road against Charlotte, where the Hawks are 11-point underdogs. Even if Torian were to play, the Hawks are in a pretty unfavorable spot against the Hornets. Not that the Hornets are, the greatest shakes in the world, but they certainly are the better team in that spot, and they're playing at home. So one of those things where no reason to push Prince too far, too fast here. So we'll see if he's ready to go on Wednesday. But at this point in time, the doubtful listing on the day before is usually a good sign the guy's not going to play. It's not unprecedented that he could play, but again, with the back-to-back on the agenda and a long road trip coming ahead after a couple more home games, there's just no reason to push Torian Prince along. So just follow that away as well. And that's kind of all I have in terms of injury updates. There's not really much else going on in Hawksland after they played their game on Saturday night, which I did recap on this particular podcast. So if you're a new listener, if you missed that episode, please go back and listen to that breakdown of what was a nice win for Atlanta over Miami on Saturday night at State Farm Arena. With that said, also please subscribe to the podcast. Do all that fun stuff. It's really appreciated if you guys would be subscribers. That's very, very nice for everyone involved, including me, as well as the entire Lifetime Podcast Network. But please leave 5-star feedback. Find us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, all those places that you might like to listen to podcasts. We should be there. If we're not there, please let me know that, and I will do my best to rectify that in the very near future. So after this very short break, we'll be back again with Jeff Siegel, and lots of conversations still to come, so stay tuned for that.
Jeff, thank you for joining me, sir. What's going on?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm all right. It's Monday evening. We've updated the injuries, all this fun stuff. There's not, the Hawks haven't played since Saturday, so it's kind of a dead-ish period. And after this, the schedule is basically like every other night or more for like a month. So this is kind of a weird dead period. But you're hopping aboard to talk about a bunch of stuff here. And I think we talked about this before we started recording, but I'm going to dive into some of the numbers right now. I mean, it won't all be about numbers, but kind of just leads us off into some tangents. And I think the biggest thing that everyone's been talking about, including you and I, in writing and in podcasting and Twitter, is turnovers. I know you want to talk about that too. Right now the Hawks are 29th in the league in turnover rate, according to Clean in the Glass, and that's really, really bad. So obviously that is bad, and everyone knows that's bad, but like, how does that manifest? I do think that it kind of bleeds into some other areas, which is also worth talking about.
Yeah, I think it's something where you just assume, or some people assume that turnovers are just sort of this thing that only affect one side of the court or the other, and it's really, turnovers are sort of the one thing that affect everything. If you're turning the ball over like the Hawks are, your defense is like can't be good, because you're always in transition, and transition opportunities are just better than half court opportunities by like a mile. And it's just, so the Hawks, when they turn the ball over, it's that offensive possession is bad, obviously, because you didn't even get a shot up. Plus, the other team is running down your throats, which is where the Hawks also struggle in terms of transition frequency, transition efficiency defensively. So it's really affecting them on both sides of the floor. And it's the big thing with them is that it's not just one guy. It's not like, oh, they've got a point guard who's a little turnover prone and that pushes them down the list. It's like everybody. Like there are six guys on this team who are in the 20th percentile or worse for their position on at turning the ball over. And so that's Trae Young, Kent Bazemore, Torian Prince, Alex Len, Jeremy Lin, and DeAndre Bembry are all in the bottom fifth of their own positions at turning the ball over. And that's just, it's like a systemic thing. And so you wonder, what are they doing about it? What do you think they should do about it? And you ask Pierce about them, like we've asked Pierce about them after the last few games, like what's going on with the turnovers? What are you guys preaching to them in practice during the games, et cetera? And he sort of lets it go. Like he's not, I think that was the most interesting thing of the three games that I was in Atlanta to cover, was he doesn't seem to care that much that they're so bad in turnovers. I think they would like to be better, but I don't think he's not admonishing the guys for trying things and turning the ball over when they do, which is interesting to me.
Yeah, I do think that some of that's just the way his public persona is. I would imagine he's a little bit harsher behind the scenes when it comes to the turnover stuff. I do think that this team was always going to be high in turnovers, which is bad. With that said, it's been worse than I would have ever imagined. Granted, it's only, you're talking about a very, very small sample. It's nine games. But, you know, last year they were 29th in turnover rate, according to Clean the Glass, albeit, you know, they're 29th now, but albeit there was about 2% less, which is actually, that sounds like a small, like a small amount. That's actually a huge amount. That's a big difference. 2% turnover rate difference is a large, for a whole team, is a very, very big difference. And they've been much worse this year than they were last year. But the last 2 years, they've been bad in this. You know, 2 years ago, it's a very different team with Dwight and all that fun stuff. But last year, a fairly similar team. There were some differences, obviously. Point guard's different, etc. But there's a lot of guys who are still on this roster from last year. But as you mentioned, it's kind of across the board. You know, I would have assumed, and you know, Trae Young's going to have a lot of turnovers this year. The fact that he's not even really that close to being the number one guy on this list in terms of turnovers is kind of funny. I'm actually okay if Trae Young turns the ball over. I wanted to ask you about that too. Like, he's gonna do it. Obviously, you would want him to do it less, but with the amount of time that he has the ball in his hands and his assist rate, you know, which is currently 41% according to Basketball Reference, that's kind of off the charts good. Turnovers for Trae Young don't really bother me much. It's going to happen. He's a rookie. Down the line, he'll have to clean it up a little bit. But like right now, he doesn't really bother me. It's the other guys, particularly it's Taurean Prince and DeAndre Bembry are the ones that kind of bug me more than the most. You know, Alex Len's very high as well, as you mentioned. But Prince and Bembry don't have the ball in their hands all that much. Obviously, Prince does from a scoring perspective, but he's not the guy who's going to be initiating the offense more often than not. So for him to have a 20% turnover rate almost is like really, really bad. This is kind of a new thing, and the fact that I'm not sure this is an area that he's been this bad in previously, and I'm not sure it's going to stay this way. So that's something to point out. But both those guys, Prince and Bembry, being in this stratosphere is just like you can't live with that. Bazemore, you know, he turned the ball over a lot last year, probably too much. It's probably his biggest weakness offensively over the last couple of years is his turnovers. But so you kind of almost plan for it a little bit. And with his slightly reduced role offensively, it's not going to kill you quite as much. But the other two guys, like, you know, especially Prince, with as much as he plays, he cannot turn the ball over this much, or the Hawks are going to be in some serious trouble offensively.
Yeah, Bazemore, his turnover rate is high like it always is, but he's using, you know, fewer possessions than he usually does. And they're sort of migrating that sort of secondary offensive guy, that secondary offensive creator role, is more in Prince's corner, and he's turning the ball over a ton, like you were saying. So he, you know, I think that's the part of it that is worrisome, that he's supposed to be in these sort of advantage situations where they're getting him the ball in a secondary role where his guy is closing out to him, and he's still turning the ball over about one in every five possessions, which is just like astounding when you think of it like that. Like, out of every five possessions that he uses, he's turning the ball over, which is just, I mean, you know, especially for a guy who we don't think, it's not like Trae Young where it's like, okay, he's an unbelievable passer and every once in a while he's going to get picked off because that's just the way it goes when he takes these massive risks. I mean, you know, the long looping cross court pass with his left hand to Omari Spellman in the corner, if that's a turnover and he tries that kind of stuff, it's fine. Like you were saying, like it's not great, but it's not a big deal 10 games into his career if he's still turning the ball over at a very high rate. Prince is not even that good of a passer. Like, he's not, and he doesn't like look to pass as much as you would even really want him to. He's more of like a scorer. So if you're a scorer and you're turning the ball over a ton, like that gets to a bigger issue than say like Trae Young has.
For sure. And all this stuff is small sample. You know, it's 9 games. Prince is probably not going to play on Tuesday, and we'll see how they look without him, with, you know, Herter and Bembry playing more, and probably some Dorsey, maybe even some Daniel Hamilton. But, you know, Prince, 32 turnovers, 29 assists right now. You know, I don't think he's going to finish the season with more turnovers than assists. But at the same time, you know, he's just kind of struggled the last 3-4 games, like, in a big way. And if the shot's not falling, it's kind of tough to watch him sometimes offensively right now. But, you know, we're talking about this knowing full well that this is all small sample size theater. At the same time, I mean, would it surprise you? It certainly wouldn't surprise me if the Hawks were in the bottom 2 or 3 in the league on turnover rate for the full season. It'll be better than this, but I wouldn't surprise me if it got back to like last year's level of like 16%. That's still really high, but that's a bottom 3, 4, 5 number in the league probably.
Yeah, I mean, if you're at 16%, you're probably finishing 26th, 27th in turnover rate, which is still not great, but it's a lot better than 18%. I mean, when you think about, you know, how many possessions there's roughly 100 possessions in a game. If you have two less turnovers every game, that's pretty significant. So, you know, I think that's and with Prince, it's small sample size this year with the 20% turnover rate, but it's not like he's been great at keeping the ball in his previous years. You know, he was fifth percentile and then fourth percentile the last 2 years. It wasn't quite as bad as 20%, but he's at 17%, 16% turnover rate consistently now. So it's not like I wouldn't think that, like with Trey, he's going to get better at it because he's just going to get better. He's a rookie. This is his, is really is a small sample size. For Torian Prince, it's, I think this, it's not, you know, maybe it's not like who he's going to be long term, but I don't think we can just be like, oh, well, it's just a 9-game blip. Like, this is now a, you know, however many games he's played blip, where it's really, he's a turnover machine as he is right now.
Yeah. And that's, it's worth noting. It's something he's going to have to get better at in order, especially, I do think, I know you and I have talked about this a lot, so I don't want to do it again necessarily, but on a better team, you would think that Prince would be less of an offensive option. Like, he's not going to be a primary guy for most teams, but he is in Atlanta right now, and that's one of the things that he's going to have to get better at moving forward. Other guy that we briefly talked about there was DeAndre Bembry. I want to talk about him in a couple of different ways, but you know, the turnovers are kind of our entry point here. Very, very high turnover rate, but if you look at the numbers this year, Bembry, I think, has impressed according to where we thought he was going to be. At the same time, his numbers, aside from the shooting, are kind of bad at this moment. Like, for instance, Bembry has a 9.7 PER. He has a 48% true shooting percentage, and that's with making a good amount of threes. He's turning the ball over a lot. His assist rate is below his turnover rate, et cetera, et cetera. I've had in my mind that he's been playing pretty well this year, and I still kind of believe that. But with that said, you know, I think it's important to like kind of take stock that he hasn't probably been as good as we might have even thought that he's been over 10 games. I know the shooting is kind of helpful. Like, I actually got into a comment discussion today that I'm sure you did not see because you don't read the comments, but about Bembry's shooting and how real it is. And I'm not sure it's, you know, it's 40% from three right now over 9 games, and he was pretty good at the end of last year too. I don't think that's actually what he's going to be. So if we assume that he's a little bit better, probably not going to be that good. He needs to be better in other areas. And offensively right now, it's been kind of a mixed bag. Like, his numbers are okay in terms of box score stats, but the efficiency's not been great, and some of the other stuff has not been great.
Yeah, I mean, he's really just not finishing very well at the rim, and yes, he didn't do that last year. He did it in his rookie year. You know, obviously he hasn't played a ton, you know, throughout, you know, he hasn't gotten consistent playing time because of the injuries, because of other guys ahead of him in the rotation. But, you know, now he sort of is, you know, he is getting pretty significant playing time. I mean, he played 436 minutes according to Cleaning the Glass last season. He's already at 201, and we've only played 9 games.
Yeah, he's actually fourth on the team in minutes this year.
Yeah, he plays consistently, and so it's going to be, you know, obviously there have been some injuries with that, like Dwayne Dedman would probably be, you know, in that discussion if he had played all 9 games, et cetera. But Bembry is a big part of this team, and it's not, I'm not sure that looking at how his 3-point percentage is maybe not as indicative of his overall skills as like how many threes are you taking. You know, right now threes are 26% of his overall shot profile, which is really bad for a wing. And he gets to the rim a ton, but again, he's not really finishing there. So even if he's shooting pretty well from outside, if he's not taking a ton of threes because he's opting to go to the rim where he's not finishing very well, again, it's not, you know, that push and pull is not really, not pushing in his favor particularly.
Yeah, it helps that he's good defensively, but you know, he probably needs to take more threes. I do think that him making what I think it's like 43% right now from three, that's not going to sustain, but his shot does look better, which we should point out. I think I've said this before. I know you have as well, is that it does look cleaner. Like looks like he's more confident in it. I think it's actually something that he can knock down some open shots. It's not all of that. The utility isn't super high. It's probably the best way for me to put it, is that it takes him a while to get it off. He's not going to really shoot a ton off the dribble, which is fine. It's never going to be the number one part of his game. But with that said, you have to look beyond that. I think people are seeing the fact that he's had some nice moments. He could be sort of a box score stuffer at times, and the 3-point shooting looks better. So you might assume like this big step forward, and it is in terms of just playing a lot of minutes and not killing the Hawks and just being fine. Honestly, I've always been a big fan of Bembry's, but I don't think he's played as well as I even thought. And looking at the numbers and the finishing is the biggest thing right now. If he can't finish at the rim, it's really, really tough to be a productive NBA wing if you're not going to be like a high-end shooter, which it's important that you're pointing that out because, you know, you can make a high percentage and not be a high-end shooter. It's kind of not the same thing, because if you're only taking shots when you're wide open, there's real value in you taking them and making them. But if there's not a lot of gravity there, if you're also a bad finisher, it becomes tough. Bembry can sort of overcome that because he's good off the dribble. He's good at creating for others when he wants to. But at the end of the day, his profile, he's going to have to be good around the rim, and he's not been good around the rim.
Yeah, I think there's really one of three things. I think for him to be a rotation wing on a team that's good, on a team that has playoff aspirations, one of the three areas of his offensive game has to get better. He either has to get to the rim and finish when he gets there, which he gets to the rim very well, can't finish when he gets there. He has to shoot a bunch of threes and make them at a respectable clip. He's making them at a respectable clip, but again, not taking very many of them. Or he just needs to stop turning the ball over. If he can do just one of those three things, he's going to be fine, because he can, even if the finishing numbers at the rim are not great, the fact that he's getting there a ton still means those are relatively efficient shots compared to what he could be doing, which is pulling up for floaters or mid-range jump shots. So if he's getting to the rim a ton, and sure, his finishing numbers look bad compared to everybody else's finishing numbers, if the volume's high enough, the efficiency doesn't really have to be that high to make him valuable. So if he can boost those finishing numbers a little bit, that'd be great. If he can make some, you know, if he can start taking more outside shots and keep that percentage up, that would be really good. Or if he can morph into more of a secondary creator as a passer, still being able to get to the rim, maybe the finishing is sort of stays where it is, maybe the three-point shot stays where it is, and he becomes this sort of slashing passer. If he can stop turning the ball over, that would also be good. And we're in year three of him being just abhorrently bad at turning the ball over.
Yes.
Which is, like we talked about Prince being terrible at turning the ball over. Bembry's worse. Like, he turns the ball over so much. But then again, like we talked about with Trae Young, Bembry is trying stuff. He's a good passer who sometimes turns the ball over way more than you want, but he's still a good passer. Whereas Prince is like, it's sort of hard to say, because, like, obviously turning the ball over is a part of being a good passer. Like, not turning the ball over is just like an inherent part of being a good passer.
Right.
But Bembry is a good passer. He sees, he's got good vision, and he sees openings, and he doesn't always execute well enough. Whereas Prince will just like miss wide open passes and then still somehow turns the ball over 20% of the time, which is just, you know, a dual threat of terribleness for him. But Bembry is off, you know, it's just terrible at turning the ball over. So he just needs one of those three areas to pick up, and then he'll be a rotation level player, because then, you know, the defense is always going to be there, or at least, you know, while he's still young. So I'm really not worried about him at all on the defensive end. He's smart. He gets in passing lanes. He can block shots even a little bit for him. You know, he's doing very well defensively this season. If he stays healthy like he has been, it's going to, you know, he's going to be a good defender. It's really just, can he fix one of his three big offensive holes? And if he does that, then he's going to be on this team long term.
Yeah, I agree. It's actually very well put. I think those three areas, you know, just getting one of them would be huge. I think the one that's easiest to fix is the turnovers, because that's one that you just have more control over. Some guys are just better on the rim than others. You can improve that as well. And obviously the shooting, you can improve. He already has improved his shooting. And just one more thing with Prince, you know, the turnovers are bad, but there is more leeway with Prince because of the fact that he is, I believe, now at least a good shooter, if not better than that. So there's a little bit more leeway with him as an overall offensive entity because of the shooting. There's a lot of utility in that, but the turnovers just have to be cut down. So it's a team-wide trend, as we're talking about. You know, there are 5-6 guys on this team that have to turn the ball over less for the Hawks to be good offensively, and that's kind of a transition point. Talk about the fact that, you know, right now the Hawks are 30th in offense. That's dead last in offense, according to Cleaning the Glass. That, I don't, you know, coming into the year, I would have said that they were not going to be 30. I would say that they're not going to finish 30th. I would bet on that. But that's something that Nate and Danny even covered today as well on their podcast. But the Hawks just cannot, you can't live if you're 29th in turnovers and 29th in offensive rebounding. That can lead to being 30th in offense pretty easily because the possessions just aren't there. You are giving possessions away with turnovers and you're not getting them back with offensive rebounds. You know, with that as the backdrop, offensive rebounding is never going to be a strength of this team. Obviously, John Collins will help that quite a bit because he's really the only guy on the roster that it's actually a plus offensive rebounder. But with that said, the Hawks don't really want that to be like a huge priority, and I think Collins will be more on the perimeter this year, which just inherently will lower his ceiling as an offensive rebounder just a little bit from where it was a year ago. So all that kind of put together, how not bad can this offense be if everything kind of gets cleaned up? Like, what are you expecting to see for the next 70 games? Because it's 10 games, but I think some of the stuff that we were worried about is also manifesting itself.
Yeah, and the offensive rebounding is something I'm definitely not worried about. Like, we spent a bunch of time on the turnovers because that's really is just hurting them on both sides of the floor. Offensive rebounding, because of the way they play a five-out style, Alex Len is in the corner, Dwayne Dedman's in the other corner, if they're playing together, but whatever. You know, the centers are in the corners. John Collins, when he gets back, is even going to play a little bit more in the corner, or, you know, in not offensive rebounding position, like you were saying. So I'm not worried about the offensive rebounding. They're not going to be good in that area. I don't expect them to be particularly good in that area. It's fine. It really comes back to the turnovers. They have to find a way to cut those down if they want to be a good offense. And frankly, based on the history of some of the players involved or the rookie status of some of the prominent players involved, it's probably just not going to happen. Like, it's very likely that they finish 26th, 27th, 28th in turnover rate and are going to finish 28th or worse in offense because they're going to lose the possession game of where they're going to have so many fewer possessions of actually getting good shots up, because when they get shots up, they're great shots. They've got maybe the best shot profile in the league. They just don't get enough shots up because they're always turning the ball over.
Yeah, and by the way, just for people that aren't necessarily overly familiar with this, shot profile just means like where you take your shots from. For instance, the Hawks are really good at attempting shots around the rim and from three, which is where every team wants to be right now. You want to get shots at the rim and shoot shots from three. I think Lloyd Pierce always says he wants to, you know, go good to great, which is basically emphasizing that, like getting passing up good shots for great shots, and the great shots are the open threes and shots around the rim. And the Hawks are good at that, which would be helpful if they didn't turn the ball over so much. So at the end of the day, you have to have good shooters to make all your threes, and they don't really have the greatest finishers in the world, but as a sort of overall schematic, they're doing what they want to do offensively and what everybody wants to do offensively. They just have to do that while also not turning the ball over, because offensive rebounding, as we both just said, is not really going to come. Collins will help it, but it wouldn't blow me away if they finished 25th in offensive rebounding, even with John Collins on the roster and playing, because, again, he's kind of the only one that does that. You know, centers kind of luck into stuff every once in a while. Alex Len and Dwayne Dedman are capable of offensive rebounding, but they're not. They don't really have that, like, one or two. It's basically just Collins. Everybody else is kind of not going to emphasize that and isn't going to be great anyway. So we'll see how that works, but, you know, the shot profile really helps you offensively as an overall rule, but you have to be able to get enough shots up in general, and that's kind of been the problem so far.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at the cleaning the glass numbers for shot profiles, some of the best shot profiles in the league right now, Milwaukee, let's look at this, Utah, Toronto. Those are the three, like, competitors with Atlanta for best shot profile in the league. All three of those teams are very, very good. If Atlanta could be half as good as those teams, they'd be very happy. They just have to get those shots up. And they are when they can, but they turn the ball over so much that it obviously, because they're dead last in offense, negates almost all of that great shot profile, because they just, if you don't get those shots up, then your shot profile doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's kind of a good way to put that. You know, defensively, it's kind of funny. I almost joked about it a little bit, you know, kind of going to that side of the ball just real quickly. The defense has been better than the offense, which is hilarious because we've pointed out, you know, correctly how bad they've been at times this season. And I think I mean that still. But if you go by all the rankings and all the sort of per possession stuff, the defense has been better than the offense. I'm not sure how sustainable that is. And I do think they've actually done fairly well. Some of this is just maybe luck, but, you know, they're 23rd right now in defense, according to Cleaning the Glass. And with that said, that compared to their turnover rate, I'm actually a little bit impressed by that. But the eye test just doesn't really pass that for me. Like, they look bad defensively. Like, there are teams that have looked worse, like Cleveland. I think Washington's been just ghastly defensively. You know, Chicago is hilariously bad defensively. Phoenix. There are teams that are as bad or worse. But What do you make of the defense? I mean, they've been actually been the best thing that the Hawks have done on either side of the floor this year so far is create turnovers. They're actually top 10 in creating turnovers, but that's the only thing that they've really done well defensively. And, you know, schematically, they're doing okay on defense, but they don't really have the personnel to be great on defense either. So where are you on that side of the floor? Because offense is getting the headlines from even us in this spot, but the defense has been really bad at times and also competitive at times.
Yeah, I mean, and the turnovers, like we talked about earlier, feed into a lot of why the defense has been worse than even it could have been if they weren't turning the ball over as much, because teams are just killing them in transition. They're 29th in transition opportunities against, because again, they turn the ball over so much. They're, you know, 29th in transition efficiency against, 29th in points added through transition opportunities. They're actually 15th, an average team in half court defense, which seems astounding and probably is going to drop quite a bit because, you know, and it's something that I don't think we've hit on quite yet here. They've played a very soft schedule. An incredibly soft schedule. Really, I think it might be the softest one in the league so far through the first nine games, and that's where some of their half-court defense maybe got a boost by playing some of these teams that just aren't playing very well offensively and aren't going to play well offensively. You talk like a team, you know, a team like Dallas that they caught early in the year, you know, even Sacramento, who loves to get up and down, but once you get them into the half court, or you know, aren't fantastic. Miami, Chicago are two other teams that, you know, once they're in the half court or have some issues. So I think 15th in half court defense sort of overrates them. 23rd overall overrates their talent level. And, you know, it's not something that I would be as worried about, because it seems like the edict throughout the organization is that defense is sort of something that's going to come along in multiple years from now, because they have to get good personnel in, or they have to develop the personnel they have. You know, we've talked about how Taurean Prince has this, you know, defensive reputation that doesn't really hold up when you watch him. Obviously, Trae Young and Kevin Herter and Omari Spellman are not defense first players, even though all three of them, I think we can say, have been better than we expected, though I think our expectations were basically nothing. So all three of those guys have been better, especially Trae and Herter, have been better on defense than I had expected coming in. You know, Spellman has his issues. Obviously, he's playing what we believe to be out of position at the four a lot. So, you know, his defensive stuff is always going to be a little weird just because we don't think of him as a power forward. So, you know, that's going to be interesting. And then, you know, if Prince is bad, and then, you know, they don't have Collins, so they're playing Vince Carter and Omari Spellman at the four. So, like, you know, we've talked about ad nauseum about how their defensive personnel is going to be not great. And I think 23rd sort of overrates where their defensive talent truly does lie. Though, you know, they've banked some good games and they could, you know, finish maybe 27th instead of 29th, because they have banked, you know, we're already over 10% of the way through, and they haven't been abhorrently terrible on that end of the floor. Even though they're turning the ball over a ton, they're still not awful. So if they can even if they took a step back defensively overall, but cleaned up a little bit of the turnovers, they could finish, you know, 23rd, 24th, 25th, and it wouldn't shock me. It would have before the season, but now that we're 10% of the way through and they're sort of holding up and they're going to get John Collins back, Dwayne Dedmon is still working his way back into the rotation. He's a very good defender. Bembry is, you know, going now. We know that Bembry is going to be part of the rotation unless he gets hurt. He's a good defender. Bazemore is still bringing it on that end. So, you know, they have some pieces, and as soon as Collins gets back, they have, you know, enough pieces that make sense together defensively. You know, the four is obviously where they've struggled the most because of Carter and Spellman, and just because they don't have a power forward outside of John Collins, really. So as soon as he gets back, things will just sort of might mesh a little bit better on that end. So, you know, it really wouldn't surprise me if they finished at this 23rd mark.
Yeah, I mean, I do think personnel isn't great, and the schedule thing is definitely worth noting. Like, you know, every single one of the, like, NBA strength of schedule metrics, whether it be ESPN's or otherwise, has the Hawks at 30th, and that's even with the Kings having a above 500 record, which they probably don't keep long term. They played a very, very, very soft schedule. That's just, like, that's not even me editorializing. Like, that's kind of just the objective fact. They haven't played anyone. They played basically one and a half good teams. They played Philly, and once Philly kind of turned it on, that game was over in a hurry in the third quarter when they were playing their best lineup. And they did beat Miami, and Miami, I think, is a playoff team in the East. That's a very low bar to clear, but they are a 43-win true talent level team. And that's kind of it. Everybody else they've played is not a playoff team, and it's kind of just the reality of the situation. So that definitely matters. But the defense has been competitive. You mentioned all the rookies have been better than I expected. That's absolutely true. I think especially Kevin Huerter. Kevin Huerter is like already someone who doesn't kill you defensively. And that's a huge win. He's had some really nice moments to the point where it actually kind of feels real, to be honest with you. You know, Trey, I think, has got a lot of credit with good reason. I think Trey is still bad defensively, but it isn't a situation where he's a catastrophe, which is kind of what I thought he'd be as a rookie. But I do think Huerter is the guy who I've been the most impressed by defensively, just because he's already playable on that end of the floor, which is a huge step for someone as young as he is that didn't play summer league, that didn't have really training camp, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, Herter's been good. All that to say, I don't think that the ceiling is super high defensively because of what we've talked about a lot. There isn't a ton of talent, just pure defensive talent. And contrary to everyone, not everyone, but a lot of popular belief that defense is all about effort, it's not. You have to have talent on defense. And effort is certainly appreciated and encouraged, and you need it to some extent. But this team doesn't really have a whole lot of guys who you would qualify as above average defenders, full stop. There might be two, three. Like, would you say
Bazemore, Bembry, Dedmon?
Those are the three. Yeah.
Those are the three.
Those are the three for me that I would say are above average defenders. There are guys on this team that could become that in the future that aren't quite there yet. But your point about Prince is correct. Young, for all the stuff that I've just said, because it's absolutely true that he's exceeding expectations. He's still not even an average defender, much less an above average one. And then you have Len has moments, but he's not terrible, but isn't good necessarily as a center. And then you have the other guys. So, you know, Spellman playing opposition, et cetera, et cetera. So the talent is a little bit better than I would have thought, especially right now with the way they're playing. But yeah, it's going to be a bottom 10 defense, but it may not be 29th. Like, if you asked me before the season started, if you told me that Trey was going to play 30 minutes a night and Huerter was going to be playing, et cetera, I would have told you they were probably going to finish 30th in defense. Maybe not 30th because Chicago exists, but 29th maybe defensively. I'm going to say they finished somewhere like 23rd, 24th, 25th, which is honestly really nice for a team that was supposed to be worse than this. So it's kind of funny. I think if you listen to us talk, you might think that we're pretty low. And I think we're both higher than we were a month ago. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely fair as a team overall. Yeah, I'm higher on the team and pretty much everybody involved, other than maybe Vince Carter. Like pretty much every individual player, I had lower expectations than they have hit so far this season. And Torian Prince, I think he's been worse than I expected.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think Prince is the only player that is below his baseline so far this season, which is also kind of terrifying because they're still 3-6 with a terrible net rating. That's a little bit scary. But you know, if you go down the list, you know, Trey's been better than I think anyone could have rationally expected. I would say Jeremy Lin's been worse too.
That's fair.
But lately he's been a little bit better.
He has an excuse for why he's been
correct.
Bad.
He's coming off of injury.
I'm not worried about his long-term capabilities on this team. Even 3 months from now, we're going to look back and be like, yeah, he started out slow, but he's fine.
Yeah, Jeremy Lin is kind of a different category, but those are the only two guys I think that have played below their normal baseline from what we thought was going to be this season. You know, Trey's been better than we thought. Huerter's been better than we thought. Bazemore has just been Bazemore. He's kind of the same as we always think he is. Bembry's been better than we thought. Spellman's been better than we thought. You know, Vince is just so old that like he shouldn't be playing this much, and I think everybody knows that. He was really good down the stretch the other night, which is important to note because they actually needed him to be good or they would have lost that game. But yeah, Vince is sort of a different category. I think Alex Len has been pretty good. He's had a couple nights where he wasn't, but Devin's been great, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, so that's kind of equal parts positive and also a little bit scary for when the schedule picks up. But you know, it's a team that we're going to talk about in a different way than a lot of fan bases talk about their team, because the Hawks aren't going to be good this year at any point. I think they might have one stretch or two when they're playing like a playoff team, but aside from that, it's going to be a team where they're not good. We kind of know that. It's just the goalposts are in a different place for this team than they are for some others. But I think in general, I'm encouraged by, especially for the future. I mean, you have to be encouraged by especially Young and Herter. Those guys are both ahead of schedule, which is what you, that's honestly all that matters, to be honest with you, is the young guys. Obviously, being without Collins really hurts you. That's the thing that you have to point out as well. When you're talking about how bad the team has been metrically so far, they're playing without easily a top three player on the roster. He might even be the best player. Like I picked him to be the best player before the season started. It wouldn't blow me away if he wasn't the best player, but he's certainly on the very short list of best players on your team, and you haven't had him so far at all at a position where you need him pretty desperately. I think he's the guy on this roster that's most indispensable. Maybe not now. Actually, I think I might argue that Trey's that the guy now. It's kind of funny. But
right now, with the way that Jeremy Lin has not looked like Jeremy Lin, Trae Young is, because he plays a more important position and his backup has been really terrible. I mean, it is.
And there's no third guy. Like they'd have to go.
There's also no third guy.
Yeah, there's no other option. I mean, I've been banging the drum that Collins is the most indispensable player. I think I still would. I think I still mean that. But with the way that they are playing, kind of everything through Trae, he's almost more indispensable now. Just because of the fact that they clearly sort of decided to go with him as the guy, which is what I would do, and that's what I said before the season, that's what I would have done, give him the chance. But the way that he's playing, they've leaned even harder into that, which is I definitely encourage. So you know, the overarching point is that Collins is really important and they need him back. So that's something that we're all going to be holding our breath with. And I updated people on the progress earlier on in the podcast, but until he's around, you know, a full scale evaluation is a little bit tough. But we're going to, you kind of have to do what you have to do. We have to try to at least try to provide some analysis. And it's tough with small samples. I think fans in general, this is kind of the last point that I'll make, and I'll see what you react to this. I think fans are quick, but this is not even up for debate. I think fans are definitely quicker to jump to small sample sizes as definitive, whether that be good or bad. You know, I kind of made fun of that. But even 9 games is not a sample that really matters. It definitely can show you some stuff for guys who don't have a lot of data, like Trae Young. I think we now know that Trae Young is not going to just wash out of the league. That's absolutely something that we know at this point in time. Trae Young's an NBA player. He's an NBA point guard. At a bare minimum, that's a very good sign. Same with Kevin Herter. Like, I'd be blown away now if Kevin Herter was not an NBA player based on seeing him as a rookie. That's the kind of stuff that you can find out for 9 games. But as a general rule, stats don't really matter from 9 games. And that goes for team and individual, et cetera, et cetera. So what do you think about just the whole discussion of small samples? Because it's always perilous. We have to do every caveat possible in discussing what this stuff actually means, as we just spent, you know, 30 minutes talking about it. But it's just you're trying to be responsible and also analyze the team, and it's like a really delicate balance.
I think there are certain things that you can sort of take away from a team's statistical profile, especially at the team level. Individually, it's a little bit more difficult, though there are things at the individual level that you can take. Things like shot profile for both teams and players, but especially for teams, you can sort of see, I think it's the research is that it's either 8 games or 10 games where a team's shot profile is pretty much what it's going to be. And so, you know, from that perspective, the Hawks have looked fantastic. From that perspective, Lloyd Pierce, who we know as a defensive coach because of his, you know, previous stops in Philadelphia, especially as the defensive coordinator there, we didn't really know what to expect from his offense. A lot of it has been very much a holdover from the Bud offense. A lot of it looks very similar. They're even very, you know, even some of their ATOs are very similar. You know, we can get into the scheme of all of that stuff as well. But their shot profile through 9 games is good enough. And is you know, maybe it's not going to be top of the league level throughout the entire season, but it's, I think that's one area in which we can say, yeah, they're going for the right shots, and sometimes they don't always get there because they turn the ball over too much. But when they get there, they're taking the right shots, and I don't think that that's something that we can just be like, oh, well, it's 9 games, who knows? Like, I think that we've seen enough from this team that those are the shots they're hunting. And those are the shots that they're going to take this season. And those are the shots that Lloyd Pierce sort of pushes them to take. So I feel comfortable saying that their shot profile is something that will continue throughout the season. Everything else is a little wishy-washy, you know, even the turnovers, though I don't expect much from the turnovers in terms of decreasing their total percentage of the offense. But it does, everything else is a little more up in the air on an individual level. I think a lot of stuff is more up in the air, other than, like you said, Trae Young, Kevin Huerter. Those guys are not going to be busts at their spots. They're probably, you know, Huerter in particular is probably, we're going to look back on him a year from now, and it's going to be a little bit like Collins at 19, where it's like, if we did a redraft, he might go 13 or 12. You know, so, and then Trae Young, we'll see, because he's so sort of boom or bust, but we've seen enough of the booms that we're, that I feel, we both feel comfortable saying, like, okay, this guy's going to have enough. He's got enough of everything to be an NBA player and to be really, you know, an NBA starting point guard. If he can cut down on the turnovers, he's already there, you know? So it's, you know, it's good. I think it's encouraging, and it seems like we've been talking about all the reasons why they're so bad this year, but our expectations coming in, at least mine, were that they were just going to be abhorrently bad, and they're not abhorrently bad. They're better than I expected across the board, pretty much, except for, you know, a couple of the guys that we mentioned. So that's a positive sign, I guess. I mean, if you really expected them to, like, push, you know, 40 games and try to make the playoffs, then you might be a little disappointed, but also you had terrible expectations, so that's on you.
Yeah, that's well said, and I agree on the shot profile. That's something you could definitely take away, and we could probably do an entire Lloyd Pierce podcast later on. We kind of stayed away from that. I mean, his influence is apparent in a lot of different ways, but I'm going to kind of hold off, and I think you and I will do a Lloyd Pierce expose at some point, and talk about, you know, sort of his early season and his early career. This is obviously his first stop as a head coach and how he's looked, but I've been pretty impressed so far with what I've seen. So we will talk about that much more in the future. So I think we've probably done enough for today, Jeff, but you wrote something very interesting on Monday about Daniel Hamilton. People reacted to, which I thought was interesting because it's a G League look at what Daniel Hamilton did. He's actually back in Atlanta now and might actually play on Tuesday, considering the Torian Prince absence. It would not blow me away if they threw him out there because he'll be active. But what'd you see from him real quickly? I mean, don't give your entire piece away, but you wrote about that, and please plug anything else that you would like to plug.
Yeah, if you want to read about Daniel Hamilton, who is on a fully guaranteed minimum contract with the Hawks, and ostensibly as soon as he is back healthy, which I guess he is now, might get his shot in the rotation. He, you know, had a bit of a shoulder injury in sort of mid-September and has been out for the last 6 weeks. Played a back-to-back over this past weekend on Friday and Saturday with the Erie BayHawks. Looked fine from a health perspective and was not good at actually playing basketball, which is weird. If you look at his box score, you know, he had a triple-double on Friday night and he had 24 points and 12 assists on relatively efficient shooting on Saturday night. And he was just like not an NBA player in those minutes. Like, I just don't, you know, you can read about like the specifics of why I think that, but he was not good defensively. And it wasn't that he was, some of it was that he was like sort of disengaged. Some of it might've been conditioning, but a lot of it was like, just like fundamentally and from like an awareness perspective, he just didn't have it. And if he's not going to bring that, and you know, the shot looks super weird, like you can see it in some of the clips that are in that post, he just can't, like, he's never going to be a good shooter because of the way he shoots the ball. You know, he can maybe get to an average catch and shoot 3-point shooter and a below average defender, which is like probably not a rotation point guard, or not a point guard, even like a rotation wing. You know, he can sort of play in that primary playmaker role, but he can't pull up for shot. Like, you can read more about like the specifics of his game, but I was higher on him coming out of his last season with the Oklahoma City Blue than I am now that I saw 2 games. Maybe, you know, again, 2 games, he was coming back from an injury. Maybe the conditioning wasn't there, but there were other troubling signs, and just like the way he shoots the ball, the way he is unaware and doesn't really have great defensive fundamentals. Those things are worrying on a bigger level than just, oh, it was just 2 games and, you know, there are you know, it was just 2 games and maybe his conditioning is bad. So, you know, we'll see, obviously. Maybe he'll get out there on Tuesday night, and maybe into the future if Torian is out a little bit longer. Maybe he'll, you know, play Tuesday, Wednesday, and I might even see him on the floor in L.A. on Sunday. So, you know, we'll see. But the 2 games that he played with Erie were not particularly encouraging for his NBA career.
Yeah, and it's something to point out. I think – I know you know this, and I think you – did a good job of writing it, but there was some reaction like, it's just 2 games, you guys are overreacting. I'm like, no, like, we're not making the entire assessment based on 2 games. With that said, the question, because of the fact that he's only on a 1 year contract for the minimum, if he can't help you now, he probably isn't going to help you. So that's sort of the thing that I was viewing that through when I read and edited what you wrote, and I agree with it. It's a situation where I understand that you need perspective on Daniel Hamilton and anybody that's in that situation because of the injury, et cetera. But he's on a 1 year contract, and isn't that young? And is it sort of a weird player already to where like he has to fit a certain way? He's very not position specific. Like he has to have the ball in his hands. He's more of that like kind of jack of all trades kind of guy. So just an interesting evaluation that I would definitely encourage people to read. I'm sure not a lot of people watch that, and there's some video clips there that kind of show what Jeff's talking about. So please go ahead and read that. And we might see Daniel Hamilton on Tuesday. I am sort of still intrigued by like the idea of Daniel Hamilton, but I'm also not sure that he's going to be playing at any point, because if he's not playing Tuesday, he's going to need an injury, because the Hawks, if nothing else, the Hawks have four guys on the wing that aren't going to go anywhere right now. They have Torian Prince, they have Kent Bazemore, Kevin Herter, and DeAndre Bembry. Those guys are all going to play every night that they're healthy this season, and that kind of doesn't put anywhere for Hamilton or Tyler Dorsey or anybody else to go. So it's kind of a rough spot there for guys trying to
break their rotation. Yeah, and Hamilton's not even that next guy up because Tyler Dorsey exists.
Yeah, I would assume it's Dorsey too.
Maybe Hamilton is the next guy up when Prince is out, because Hamilton is bigger.
Size-wise, yeah.
You know, size-wise, he's 6'7", listed at 195, but might be a little bit bigger than that. You know, you can't throw Tyler Dorsey out in Torian Prince's role, but you could probably throw Daniel Hamilton out in Prince's role. It wouldn't go well, but he could at least fake it, whereas Dorsey could never even fake it, especially defensively. Hamilton, if you don't want to read about him or you don't want to watch him play, think about DeAndre Bembry, but worse on defense and maybe a little bit better of an outside shooter. And that's pretty much what you got with Daniel Hamilton, but like way worse on defense, at least through the two games that I saw.
Oh, and he is. Even pre-injury, like that was, you know, I watched a good amount of film on him from last year when the Hawks signed him, and G League. I mean, all kinds of film. It's not exactly the greatest evaluation environment all the time, but you can definitely see that Hamilton's not going to be a great defender right away. So, yeah, I think it's a tough path for him. But part of this, and this is the last thing that I'll say about it, is that the Hawks might have a decision to make pretty soon in the fact that if they want to keep Alex Poitras around, they're going to have to cut somebody in about a month or so, and Hamilton is the very obvious candidate if they were to do that. So he's going to have to show them something. You know, it's not a foregone conclusion that they're going to keep Poitras around, but in order to do that, once the two-way clock runs out, they'd have to cut someone if they wanted to keep Poitras. And for me, Poitras is a much more valuable player than Hamilton to this roster right now. So if I had to make that choice today, which they don't have to make, they have another month or so, but if it was today, I would pretty easily just cut Hamilton and go with Poitras.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to convince me of that. You know that I'm on Alex Poitras Island. I am the governor of Alex Poitras Island. I own all the real estate except for maybe a little bit of it. I mean, I'm all in on Poitras. I think he's right now with Collins out, he's probably the best power forward on the roster.
Yeah.
Unless you think that Dwayne Dedmon should be playing a little bit of power forward, which I would experiment with in a way that he, you know, that Lloyd Pierce sort of did for a little bit against Philly, but hasn't done that consistently. So, you know, I think Dedmon probably can play the four better than Poitras can, but in terms of just guys who are generally thought of as normal power forwards, Spellman, Carter, Poitras, even Torian Prince at the power forward position, Poitras is probably the best guy out of that lot.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm definitely okay with the Hawks playing Spellman, just because he's their future, or at least part of their future. So I get that, even though my thoughts are documented on the fact that I think he's a center. They don't really have center minutes to offer him, so I understand that they want to play him. But I agree with you. If I had to win a game today, if it was my job or my life on the line, I would go with Poitras for a lot of minutes at the four right now without John Collins. So,
which is kind of scary because he's on a two way and shows you how thin they are at the four without Collins. But you know, we've known that since the summer, once they sort of put this roster together and we look down the list, and it's like there's the two power forwards on the roster are John Collins and the two-way guy, Alex Poitras. And so, you know, they're making it work at the four right now, but certainly getting Collins back is priority number one. But, you know, you have to think of what his you know, the long-term health matters way more than the short-term health for this team right now. So, you know, it may be a while before we see Collins back on the floor.
There you go. Well, we'll keep an eye on Collins. Obviously, he's one of the headliners of this season. But until we get more information on that, we'll kind of leave it there. All right, Jeff. Well, thank you for joining me as always, my friend. Please follow Jeff on the Twitter machine at JG Siegel and everywhere else. Give me the list real quick, Jeff, of all the places that you write for. Now, I know it's a lot of people.
Earlybirdrights.com, which is my site, founded just in April, but I've got salary cap sheets, scouting reports, playbooks on all different kinds of teams and players, and whatever you want from a deep dive NBA perspective is on Early Bird Rights. I'm over at Forbes.com, Peachtree Hoops, of course, Fear of the Sword, Blazers Edge, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Dime.
I think that's everything.
Dime,
of course. Right. That's literally okay. Right. I write twice a month for Dime and UpRocks, where Brad and I sometimes hang out in the Slack and make fun of each other like you do.
That is what we do. All right. Well, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it, man. As for everybody else, we'll be back after the game on Tuesday. It's election night, but that won't stop me from recording a podcast because I'm a crazy person. So that'll be what I do on Tuesday evening. And for Wednesday morning, you'll wake up to that podcast. So please stay tuned for that. Subscribe to the show. Do all that fun stuff. And we'll see you guys tomorrow.